seasons are underway and DraftKings is bringing you to the podium. DraftKings free-to-play pools are available every day of the games in Tokyo and offering a free shot at up to $50,000 in total cash prizes. That's up to $50,000 up for grabs, and the best part is it's free-to-play. DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. You just download the DraftKings app now, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to get your free shot at up to $50,000 in total cash prizes every day of the games in Tokyo. Head to DraftKings pool page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. That's promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for full details. Hello everyone, my name is Ryan Stacey and welcome to the Hockey Minds podcast. This podcast is powered by Instat, the leader in video and data analysis. Instat Hockey supports all levels of our game worldwide with video breakdowns and or scouting services. For more information, you can visit Instat on the web at instatsport.com or on Twitter at Instat Hockey. Today I'm joined by Matt Prefontaine, video and analytics coach with the Winnipeg Jets. Matt is driven and has a tremendous amount of hockey knowledge, which is on full display throughout this interview. With that, here is Matt Prefontaine, video and analytics coach with the Winnipeg Jets. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Matt Prefontaine, video and analytics coach with the Winnipeg Jets. Matt, thanks for joining the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited for the next little bit of time we have together.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's always interesting to get an NHL coach, and we just had a kind of a conversation there, and we have a lot of connections, a lot of overlap, some mutual connections and that kind of thing. So, a lot to unpack here and a lot of great lessons I think listeners are going to learn from your story. But first and foremost, let's learn more about you personally, talk about your upbringing, and this kind of some more information on you.
Yeah, so I'm pretty lucky because I get to work in the NHL in my hometown. And there's some good things to that and some negative things to that. But I'm from Winnipeg originally. So I grew up in Winnipeg. And then about age 12, we moved outside of the city, a bit north of the city. So I'm born and bred here. Left for a little while, but came back. When I was young, I was pretty involved in sports. My parents had me involved in quite a variety of things. So I was involved in sports. So I played soccer and hockey growing up, all the way till I was 18, some music and played the saxophone, did those kind of things through school. When I got to high school, I played high school football. So I played football through 3 years of high school and badminton and did some track through shot puts and discuses and those kind of things. And played sports pretty much growing up. Was never, overly good at any of it. Actually, football, I was probably would have been what I was best at through high school. But I was pretty undersized in the position I played. So I played on the line and played offense and defensive line, but I was pretty small comparatively. But enjoyed sports all through my life. And then also was pretty big into technology growing up too. So now I'm in a position where I'm combining technology and sports together, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, almost a dream scenario for you, kind of being able to infuse the love of sports, technology, and then in your hometown, like you said, that can be good and bad. But it's always interesting to hear the early experiences and the different sports you're involved in, and just kind of see how that progressed throughout your career. Being the base and foundation of kind of your interests. And like a lot of people, when you enjoy sports and that's really your passion, you might look to pursue a degree in sports or something in recreation. And for you, you actually were like me and went to Brock in the sport management program. So maybe just talk about the decision to make that move to Ontario and then just your experience with that program.
Yeah, so the decision came abruptly. I was actually focused on science. With COVID being a thing now and being a big issue worldwide, for the last, you know, however many months it's been. I was in microbiology, and I was actually at the University of Manitoba, and I was in a microbiology program. And when I was doing that, I had, growing up, I was also a timekeeper for hockey. So I never really wanted to get into reffing because I didn't really like the idea of being yelled at by a whole bunch of fans or parents. And so I did some timekeeping. And what ended up happening when I was in university, the Moose were in town. Obviously, the Jets had moved out, and the Moose were in the American Hockey League. And this was in 2006, I believe. They had some openings for off-ice officials. So got in contact with Scott Brown, who was there, who's still there actually with the Jets, is in their communications department, and became an off-ice official. And I started to just kind of get a glance at working in hockey. And then I saw all these people working in hockey, and I was like, I was not aware of this as a profession before. And then I got involved a little bit on the technical side because the American Hockey League started tracking time on ice, and they didn't have a system to do it. They tried to do it, and it just didn't work. So there was another off-ice official and his son who kind of set up an Excel program to do it. That was okay, but then I took the Excel basically program to track time on ice and made it work. And so I got to kind of do... So then I was tracking time on ice with something that I created, which was kind of neat. It was my first kind of idea of it. And then I started thinking about the idea of maybe this is a job that I could go into. Maybe this is a career. I didn't know what exactly. But I thought, oh, this is interesting. So I started looking around, and I found Brock, a sport management program, and really was the only undergrad at the time that was even available in Canada. I sent in an application on a whim, kind of, I think it was February-ish sometime in the winter, and got accepted. And my wife was my girlfriend then, and my parents, and I kind of sat them down, and I think it might have been all at the same time. I can't recall. But I was like, hey, I'm going to move to Ontario, and I'm going to go into sport management, and I'm not going to be in science anymore. And science was a career path. I was going to be a microbiologist when I was 7 years old. So this was like an abrupt change in kind of where I was going. So that was kind of that was the path that took me to make that decision to move to Ontario, and then got to Brock and got into the sport management program, which was a good time. As you know, you were in that program. Obviously got some recognition because of Kyle Dubas going through that program as well. And they've produced a lot of people in a lot of different places in sport. They've done a really good job of doing that. And so I got out there and decided to, you know, I'm just going to move out there and get into the program and see where it goes.
Yeah. And I think the decision paid off with the experiences that followed, but I think one thing that a lot of people don't really realize is, you know, it's a big decision to kind of make a move like that. You know, you came from Manitoba, I came from Newfoundland, moving anywhere to pursue school in a field that, as we kind of talked about earlier as well, is not always the easiest. There's a lot of hours, all these different things that you really have to kind of see if it's worth it or not. And ultimately, you decide that was the decision you want to make, and that's the direction you want to go in. And with the Brock program, one of the requirements or one of the opportunities at the end of the program is an internship. And for you, that was at the AHL level with Rockford in a broadcast intern role. So maybe just talk about how you ultimately found that opportunity and then how that experience was for your development in the game, albeit not originally on the hockey ops side.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you talk about career paths, and you know, I'm in the NHL. And to get there, it took a whole bunch of little steps to get there, and kind of already started the path, or we've started along that path, and get to Ontario, and I'm at Brock, and I was pretty willing to work for free. I know that there's, you know, mixed opinions on whether you should do that or not. For me, it worked out. I ended up going to Brock, working there, or going to school, and then I ended up doing an internship in Hamilton. So it was working in their communications department, got more exposed to that side of things. And I like communications. So I thought, this is interesting. Maybe I can go down that route. And So I got exposed to that, and then I started talking to our Sean Whiteley, who was our sports information director of sports information at Brock for athletic department. And we started talking about setting up a stream of some of the Brock athletics, and specifically hockey, because I was interested in the hockey team. And he was like, yeah, sure. So we ended up going out to Seymour Hanna Arena in St. Catharines and cobbled together a broadcast where we had a camera and we had audio and play-by-play and color. And it got to the point where we had graphics, we had a scoreboard and clock and all that kind of stuff. And I was really interested in that because I really liked the technical side of it. I liked the side of streaming video. It was pretty new then. We were the only ones in the CIS that were doing really anything like it at the time. But then I was also working with the hockey side, so I got to combine the two things. And I got to work with so Jake Parkhill and Derek Sigsworth were two guys that I was doing that with there. And we had a pretty good setup. We got featured on the front page of Ustream at one point during our broadcast, and there was 40,000 people watching a Brock hockey game where we were doing stuff. And that was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool experience. So then I thought, well, you know, communications is interesting. The broadcasting part's interesting. There was a potential internship with Brock TV to do that, to continue on doing that. So that was an option. And then out of nowhere, I saw a radio broadcast internship with the Rockford IceHogs. And it was, again, one of those decisions. Normally it's funny because I'm a pretty thorough person. I'm pretty, I research things pretty, maybe over research things when I'm making decisions on buying stuff and things like this. But in these couple of situations, I did enough research, but I made the decision pretty quickly. So I applied with the IceHogs and did an interview with Mike Peck, who was their broadcaster then. And it was a whirlwind, you know, get hired, figure out visa. That was an interesting thing, figuring out going to work in the U.S. as a Canadian, not getting paid again. So that was one aspect that made it easier, but I was on a student visa down there and never been on the radio before. I've been on some streams, but never had any formal radio experience. And I was going to be their in-studio radio host for all their games. So again, I didn't have any of the, you know, requisite experience, I would guess, but I was pretty open to learning it, and that's where I ended. That's how I ended up in Rockford.
Yeah, another interesting story there, just kind of how you made your way there. And you know, the theme of the story, and the theme of, it seems like a lot of people's story, is opportunities come out of nowhere and you kind of just have to jump at it, or it's going to pass you by. And sure enough, like you said, you're very diligent in your research, but another opportunity comes and here you are going to the US and working out the visa and all those fun things that a lot of people know is not always easy to deal with. And so as you kind of continue in that opportunity, again, as you told me earlier, instead of heading back to Brock, you end up staying on with Rockford, and this time making the move to video coach on the hockey operations side. You know, that's usually not the pathway we see from broadcasting to hockey operations, but it worked in this scenario. So maybe talk about that transition and then the task of kind of learning to code and do some of the other video coaching specific roles at the AHL level.
I think the interesting thing about not starting in the NHL and starting at lower levels potentially is that you get to work with a whole bunch of different people. You might wear a lot of hats. And what was interesting for me is being a broadcast intern, I got to interact with everybody. So I got to really get a taste of all the different jobs, but specifically with the coaching staff, because I would do interviews with the coaching staff. So I would start to interview them, and then you get to know people, right? So you're building up a level of trust. And I think trust is a very important thing when you're working with people in any profession. So you start to work up some trust with people, and it just so happened that the coaches found out that I was pretty decent with computers, and they needed a new practice plan one day. So they wanted a template for a practice plan. So I was like, okay. I asked them what they wanted. They had a sheet, and they gave it to me, and I built it in Excel in 5 minutes and printed off a copy and gave it to them. Like, what do you think about this? And they're like, wow, that was really fast. That was awesome. And so this is about midway through the season. So I got to know them over a couple months. you know, December, January, they're kind of the idea of, hey, you could help me with this. This would be awesome, comes up. And then those requests started coming in more often. Hey, can you do this thing? Hey, could you do this thing? Like, can you help me out with this random tech thing? Which is definitely part of being in video at any level, is you kind of become the de facto tech guy. Which I think for me, that works all well because I have an interest in solving those kind of problems. But I started doing that kind of stuff and got a good, decent relationship with the coaching staff. And at the end of the season, they were looking for a new video coach. And my name came up, you know, from just the interactions with the guys that were there. And Ted Dent was taking over as the head coach at that time, and interviewed with Ted and got the job. Again, no experience being a video coach, but I had a willingness to learn, and I dedicated a lot of time. So I was actually working. So I went back home from my internship in the summer and didn't know 100% what was going on. It was a pretty exciting time because the Jets were in the return phase, getting announced, and I was out working at a provincial park in Manitoba. So I did that actually for a long time in the summers. I worked at a campground on the maintenance staff, so I get to drive tractors and do all that kind of stuff. I didn't exactly know what my next step was, but that all kind of went through. And as the Jets were returning, or before the Jets returned, I got offered the job, and I was thinking, wow, I'm going to go now live in Rockford, you know, actually get paid to be there, do this job. There was no NHL team in Winnipeg. And then a couple weeks after I get the job there, the Jets are announced they return. I was like, wow, that's interesting. Maybe I'll work there someday. Who knows? But I'm out basically working in the middle of nowhere at this provincial campground, and I get a laptop shipped to me from the Blackhawks with nothing on it, video, some games on it, and a program called Sports Code. And then I sit down and try to figure out what I'm supposed to do with it. Luckily for me, they have some really good folks at Sports. It was Sports Tech at the time. It's Huddle now, that I got to connect with and talk to them a little bit about just the basic operations of it. I didn't have internet, and I couldn't go on to YouTube. YouTube really wasn't used for that kind of thing then, even, or for those kind of tutorials then. But I kind of just sat down and messed around with how to work the program, got familiar with it, and then talked to, you know, the coaching staff, kind of what they wanted from me, and kind of developed a game plan over the summer before I went back to Chicago and then Rockford to kind of get the season started.
No, that's interesting, because I think a lot of video coaches, even the ones that, you know, maybe have had some prior experience going into a new team, you know, there's always different things that they want tracked, or maybe you're going from one program to another, and there's always these transitions. So having someone who didn't have that experience, like you said, very tech savvy, but still not having the very specific hockey coding background, you know, there's that, the process of learning, and it's great that you had the support and everything there early on from day one. And you talk about, you know, thinking maybe the Jets could be an opportunity for you, and eventually that would come. But before then, you would spend some time in Rockford in that role. And around that time, it was a very interesting situation in Rockford, because the Chicago Blackhawks were kind of in their prime with their kind of cup runs and their dominance in the league. So because of the cap crunch, you're actually seeing a lot of players go from Rockford to the NHL. You know, the players that I saw on the list were Philip Danault, you know, Shaw, Peary, Carter Hutton, and Kruger, all these different guys that would go on to make the NHL. Just talk about what you've seen in Rockford during that time from the player development standpoint, and just talk about some of those players who were able to, you know, interact with you on a daily basis.
Yeah, and kind of going back to the idea of kind of coming with a no experience, like the American League is obviously a great developmental league. A lot of players have developed there, and that's where I developed. So I got to spend a lot of time learning, and I think Ted, one of the first times that we really talked, he told me that he was a video coach, so he understood. He had done it with tape in Washington. He was using VHS tapes in the early 2000s. So he had a little bit different lens, but His thing was being a video coach is like getting your master's in hockey. So I knew hockey to a certain extent, but certainly the structure of hockey wasn't as knowledgeable in the structure of hockey then. So I got a lot of time to develop. We sat on a bus a lot of time, sat on buses a lot, and then got to really understand sports code, understand what the coaches wanted to mark and those kind of things from a system standpoint, how to identify that quickly. And then getting into the player side of things, like I said, the development of the players at the time was really, really important for the Blackhawks to, you know, continue to have success. And obviously that goes to how they brought the players into the organization, but I think we played a role in that as well. We were in 100% developmental phase there. Winning was something that you always wanted to do, because I think when we're all competitive and when you're in that environment, you want to win. But we knew that winning for us wasn't just winning games. It was also getting guys to contribute to the Blackhawks, or, you know, creating assets to the Blackhawks that they could use to bring in things to win. And you know, ultimately while I was there, we won the Stanley Cup in 2013. And seeing all those guys that were involved in that run was awesome. And you named some of the people. It's interesting the names that you have there, because these guys all have some interesting things in common in terms of they're really good people and they're really hard workers and they really cared about what they were doing, trying to get better. You know, Andrew Shaw came in when I was there and he was a rookie. And at that time I was 24. I was a lot closer to the age of the players then when they were coming in. He was a little bit older because being undrafted. So I had a good connection with Shawzy right off the bat. He came in on an American League contract and he was just a guy that you just loved for every reason, because he was such a hard worker. He would do anything for the team. It wasn't about him. You know, it's a cliche in hockey to do that, but he was really a guy that it wasn't about him becoming, it wasn't about what his individual goals necessarily were. They were still there. He wanted to get better in those things, but the team was a first thing for him. And midway through the season, he got signed to an NHL deal because he was that good in the American League on those levels, and the coaches loved him. And he got up there. He was really good in training camp too. And then he joined the Blackhawks, and that was the last time we ever saw him in Rockford. He was just such a good player. And you look at the other guys on that list too, Marcus Kruger, just a guy that worked so hard, and wanted to be good at things. Carter Hutton might be one of the best guys I've ever met in hockey. Unbelievable person, aside from being, you know, one of the best puck handlers in the NHL. Really good guy. Philip Deneau, who's obviously played a large role in Montreal getting to where they were this year. You could see kind of glimpses of what kind of player he could be, but there was a guy that you look at his post-game press conferences in the playoff run, and he's got a smile on his face. You know, that's the same smile he had coming in to play with us. So they just all had the right mentality And the interesting thing about at the American League level is that guys, the best players in the American League, don't always want to be in the American League, and it makes sense because they want to be in the NHL. But there's a bit of a process to getting there. And the guys that understand that faster excel quickly. There's a lot of guys that are actually very talented players in the American League that for whatever reason, they can't break into the NHL. Sometimes it's that mentality of, you know, why did this guy get called up before me, or whatever that situation is. The guys that kind of block that out and focus on themselves and be a good teammate, I think get there quicker. And all those guys did a really good job of doing that.
Yeah. And just kind of building off of that point, you know, everybody sees the AHL as a skill development league before an NHL, but just from your point there and talking about all those players, it's very much building that mindset that I think that's really big development piece we see from the AHL to the NHL. And it's definitely the same thing from junior jumping into that pro game. You know, there's a maturity level that needs to be built on and kind of developed over time. And definitely we've seen it with all those players. And I think that's a great point you made there.
What's really interesting to that point is that exactly what you said is that kind of developing maturity level. we started the season and we struggled. We had very young teams the whole time I was there. We had some veterans, but we had predominantly young players and a lot of players that were just moving from junior into professional hockey, but talent and skill. And we started poorly. November was not a good month for us almost all three seasons I was there. But from January on, we typically were one of the best teams in the American League. Our records were really, really good. We never made the playoffs because the start of our kind of seasons were not great. But the progress those guys made from game one to game 76 at that point in the AHL was impressive, because you always felt great at the end of the season, because despite not making the playoffs, you could see how we transitioned as a team and how these guys kind of grew into these roles of how they played. And then watching the Blackhawks in the playoffs and having those guys contribute. And I know I can vividly remember Ben Smith scoring against Vancouver in one of the playoff runs. And I was at home, and I was at home at that time, living with my parents still. And it was late because it was in Van. And I remember watching the game with my dad and then like just instinctively like yelling, and it's 11 o'clock at night. And my dad kind of looks at me. He's like, "Your mom's sleeping back there. You got to keep it down." But I was so excited to see Smitty, who was another great guy, contribute in the NHL, because I knew how good of a guy he was, how hard he worked, how much time he put into it. And then to see that contribution was a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, you build such strong relationships with these players, and that's evident in your reaction there. Like you said, 11 o'clock at night at home, but it's great to see all those players go on to the next level, and it's even an added bonus when the organization can see the hockey operations staff make that jump as well. And for you, that wouldn't be with Chicago, but it would ultimately be able to go back to your home team in Winnipeg. So just talk about the process of moving into the Jets organization and the opportunity to work at the NHL level in your hometown.
Yeah, it goes back to that series of events and how things happen. And so I really dove into Sports Code, which is the software that we use for tagging things. And even in a fairly short period of time, just with the relationship I established with the guys at Sports Tech at the time, and then going to the conference kind of yearly and interacting with different people there, I kind of got a little bit of a reputation of being pretty good with the software. And what ended up happening was the Winnipeg Jets, Tony Borgford was the video coach that moved from Atlanta, and he'd been with Atlanta for a long time. I think when they started in 99. So he'd been in the NHL for a long time, and he was looking to potentially switch software that we were using. So I was home in the summer, and he got my information from some of the guys at Huddle, and they said, "Hey, meet up with Matt. He's in Winnipeg." And I ended up going out to their dev camp and meeting with him and talking about Sports Code, and saying, "Hey, I like it because of these reasons." I didn't exactly know Exos is what they were using at the time, and he was great to talk to, and that was kind of it. They ended up switching to Sports Code. Which, I feel like I played a little bit of a role in that transition. But they made the decision to switch over to that. And, that ultimately helped me in the long run, because I was actually back at the conference. Sports Tech would have a conference in Vegas every summer. So I was down in Vegas, and I wasn't doing a presentation. That was the next season, but I was there, and all of a sudden I got a phone call from our GM, in Rockford, saying, "Hey, the Winnipeg Jets want to talk to you about a potential job." And this is in the middle of a conference. I'm going, "Wow, that's pretty crazy." 10 minutes later, I got a call from Kevin Cheveldayoff saying, "Hey, Paul Maurice would like to give you a call. We're looking for a video coach. Tony had ended up going to Stockton. He wanted to try and get on the bench. So he was looking at maybe getting on the bench, and that opened up an opportunity. Because I knew Sports Code they were looking for somebody who could operate this stuff. And the Huddle guys were like, "Hey, you should check him out." Tony threw my name out there as well. And I got a call, and that was on a Wednesday. I flew home on a Thursday from the conference, interviewed with Paul Maurice on a Friday, and got hired on Friday. So it was a pretty crazy few days in terms of – how that progression happened. And you know, I never expected to work for the Jets. I thought, you know, it's a pipe dream maybe to be able to do that. And lo and behold, after three seasons in the American League, I'm now working in the NHL in my hometown, which is pretty surreal.
Yeah, incredible story. And, you know, just taking in presentations, all of a sudden you get a call from your team. And so you get a call from the GM, and the next day you're on a flight back for an interview. And, you know, no one can really prepare you for this. And as, you know, as proficient as you were in the software and just understanding systems in the game, I'm sure it was still a learning curve and an adjustment for you, especially going into a new organization for the first time after that initial video coaching position. You know, looking at your role today, maybe walk people through a week in your position, maybe in the season, just to give a little more context and just talk about some of the tasks associated with the video coaching role at the NHL level.
Yeah, it was an interesting transition. I think the you kind of touched on it earlier, going from junior to the American League is a transition for players, going from the AHL to the NHL is a transition. It's the same for, you know, from my perspective, being on the you know, coaching or hockey operations side. It was a change. I think the biggest change making that move was a schedule. You know, the American League is very, or at that time was a lot more weekend heavy. You'd play 3-3s on the weekend and you might have a midweek game or something like that, but it was very much more focused on the weekends, where the NHL, it was consistent. You were playing every second day for months and months. And you had some 3-day, you know, 2 or 3 day blocks, but for the most part, once the season started in training camp, you were going and you were going until you know, hopefully won the Stanley Cup. That schedule was pretty shocking. And then learning the systems to the level that I needed to learn them in the NHL to be proficient at identifying those things. Yeah. So Paul was great. Cause the expectation coming in was obviously being proficient with the software and the technology side of it and making sure that the coaches all had what they needed, and then learning the hockey side along the way and learning from a individual has been involved in hockey for a really long time and a professional and a head coach, for a really long time. You know, I'm making the transition at 27, 28 into the video coaching job in the NHL, and he made the head coach transition at 28, which is mind blowing. Being somebody who did it in a much less critical position, it's pretty crazy to think about. But I understand why now after working with him for this long. But that learning that hockey knowledge took a long time, because what it did was I'd spent a lot more time in games. So my first season I came in, I was basically in charge of all the pre-scout. So how that would work is I would watch generally 3 games was enough, kind of the most recent 3 games of a team. And at that time I would cut them up, and then I would create a package that would be an edit of what I thought was important systematically theme wise of the teams. And then I would give that to Paul, and Paul would kind of cut that down to what he wanted to really hone in on a specific team, and then he would present that to the team. So I was directly involved in that pre-scouting process. My job's evolved a bit since that first year, but it was pretty intense because of the schedule. You know, if you ever got behind on what you were doing, that was not good, because it was almost impossible to catch up. But the typical structure there, and a lot of teams do it that way, is that their video coach, you know, kind of creates those edits on those pre-scouts, and that's a large component of what their job is. And then however they do that, some video guys in the NHL will present that to the players themselves. Some will pass that off. Some will pass kind of cut games to the other coaches where they'll make edits out of it. It's kind of different situations like that. Now a week in my life is a little bit different, although a week in the NHL is a long time when you think about it in terms of how we operate. I kind of think of my schedule as game day, practice day, off day, and off day means player off day, and that's kind of 4 of those are mandatory a month for the players. But that's kind of how my life revolves around when I think about what's happening. So now I have a lot more involvement in, and something that I did to start, I guess, with learning the software was one of the important things, or one of the really key things with Sports Code, is the ability to tie video and numbers together, and having direct the ability to give direct feedback on something that you're tracking to somebody who may not have necessarily understood just a number on paper. So what you can do is I can create some pretty interesting reports with some pretty rich data that at that time was pretty manually tracked, but the video is right there. So when you're giving something you can explain to it, but they can also visually see it. So that was something that I was pretty proficient in. So now I actually have a job where I can combine the two of them daily, where I'm using different information, whether it's video or data, and I combine them into in various different ways to give insight into our hockey team. And that's from a who we're going to play perspective, how we're playing on the course of the season, looking over trends, season to season. So a day in the life for me, there's certain different kind of blocks of time that I have. You know, morning I would come in. Our coaches are pretty early risers. They're normally working out by 5:30 in the morning. I get there a little bit later than that generally, especially now that I have a couple kids. Try to generally at least at some days say hi to them in the morning before I leave. So I get to the rink around 7-ish, between 6:45 and 7:30. And then typically for me is I'll take a look at the games that were played last night. I'll make sure the coaches all get those. We have a way of taking some of the third-party track data and bringing it into our video. So it makes our pre-scouting process a lot easier. So we have specific things that we have built out that we can track specific events, and it's all kind of pre-marked, and it takes me, you know, 5 to 7 minutes to have a game fully packaged and ready to go to the coaches, so I can move that out to them directly. And that's kind of the first thing I do in the morning. Then it's now I'm going to look at, typically if we played the night before, I'm looking at what happened the night before, which I've probably done a little bit, post game, but I'm going to do kind of look through our reporting, look through some of the video, and create something to give to the coaches that I think is valuable from the night before. And then at that point, you're looking to then take something from the opposition. So again, I'm combing through. I'm using data a lot to point me in directions to be efficient at what I do, because efficiency is really important when you're on a tight time schedule. And the data that we get and that we process internally really helps me to pinpoint on things that makes it a lot more efficient use of my time. So I know that's kind of a little bit of a jumbled day by day, and it's not super specific, but it's, there's a certain fluctuation that happens, but that's kind of the general operation of how my day goes.
No, I think the answer was great, honestly. And I think it also just kind of goes to show the nature of hockey. It's very early mornings, and, no day is really the same, as structured and as, efficient as you try to make it. There's always things that come up, and, different teams every night, it always changes kind of the approach. And, when you're in a situation where you're playing the same team as opposed to playing, teams from the other conference that you only see a couple times a year, it's probably going to, you're going to need a little bit longer to kind of go through that. And it might be a good time to transition into a listener question. Looking at the last season, the COVID situation in NHL, you obviously did not see as many teams as you usually would. Maybe talk about some of the pros and cons of pre-scouting when you're only playing a limited number of teams, and how much of the other divisions where you're able to take in, and maybe in preparation for playoff series and things like that.
Yeah, it was totally changed the structure of things and how we operate. From a pre-scouting standpoint, you're doing your typical pre-scout and how that would look, or your typical kind of information gathering about the opposition in your first couple games. And then when you're playing back-to-back, what you're looking at is what kind of adjustment, and you're generally focused. You can't fix everything, so you're looking at what is the one or two things we need to improve on, what are the one or two things that we need to reinforce that we did well, and you're making pretty limited changes, game to game, because there's just not enough time, especially on the back-to-back. So the nature of some of that this year was a little bit different. Playing the teams a lot really cut down on the time that you invested, because once you get to game, I mean, really game, the third game of the season after playing a team, you really know generally what they're going to do. There's kind of tweaks in terms of certain things that happen, you know, say in a face-off situation, or, you know, special teams is a little bit different because teams kind of change that up all the time. But it changed that because you really, really knew the teams. And it was great from that standpoint. It might've been one of the few positive things to come out of the, you know, out of COVID that, you know, obviously a lot of people had, a lot of issues with, over the last year, but it was a totally different experience because you were able to just concentrate on, you knew what you were going to get from that team. And you could, in a regular NHL season, but there was more time to focus on you, and the opposition was less, there was less of, you didn't have to worry about the opposition. So you just got extra time to focus on your own team, which really helped in the long run to, you know, worry about the things that on your team, you just had more time to do it. So it was a good experience. I think from just a logistics standpoint, being able to stay in a city for more than 48 hours, in some cases, you know, 36 hours was pretty good time, even though we weren't allowed to go anywhere, you know, just inside the hotel. But the idea for me of not having to pack up all my stuff after a game, and you could just let it sit there. And typically we flew out the next day, even after games. So we weren't leaving right away to the next place we were playing, just because the nature of our schedule was just so compacted. You know, we weren't really going to skate on a lot of those days anyways. That part made it a lot better too, because after the game, you could actually kind of sit and ingest all the things were going on the road. It's a mad sprint. You know, most people, you know, people have got more exposed to it now because teams have shown the work that the equipment guys and medical staff do kind of behind the scenes at the end of a game. But we're out of a building 40 minutes after, you know, the whistle goes. So, you know, I have a whole bunch of equipment that gets set up for every game that gets thrown into a trunk. And then I got to get the game up online, get it to the coaches. You know, we share it out to our players, and all those things, and not having to worry about doing that in 35 minutes to get to the bus so we can get to the plane, so we can get to the next, you know, hotel to play the next day in another city, was good from the logistics standpoint. And then, like I said, on the hockey side, I felt like you could be more efficient because you knew what to expect. So you could, it was a lot more casually watching the other teams play in our division. Once you got to a certain point in the season, it wasn't as entire, and maybe even the energy level invested in watching the other team wasn't as high. That said, you know, we joked about it kind of going before the playoffs. We didn't watch the other divisions. You know, you would see highlights and maybe you'd catch a period here or there because there was a game on and there wasn't going anything in the Canadian division, but the Canadian division was playing all the time. So there was almost always a game to watch. And you were almost always playing a team sometime, you know, not too far away. So you didn't have as much exposure to all the other teams. So, you know, we did going into the playoffs, and then obviously we had to play Canadian teams in the first two rounds, and, you know, hoping that we got by, you know, when I was prepping for the next series after Montreal, you know, Colorado or Vegas, and doing the due diligence on both those teams as the Montreal series was going on, getting as much information as we could about them. But, you know, it was kind of more like our first pre-scouts of the seasons that we would normally do in a regular season, as opposed to the typical playoff stuff, because we had no video of our own to draw from. We had no, you know, competition between those teams. So it would have been a little bit of a different situation. That's why, you know, some of those series started a little bit weird in terms of how things happened, you know, game one to game two, how different things were. I think there was a little bit of a, we haven't played these guys, we don't know what to expect. And then things really drastically change in game two. So it was an interesting season, you know, from a format. I think probably a lot of the coaches and trainers and staff would love to play more teams back to back like that in the same city and not travel, just because of it's just a better life kind of on away from the hockey side. And I think it probably provides a bit better, when you're playing those teams a lot. I think there's obviously that rivalry that happens just on the ice between the players, and gives a little bit of a different kind of feel to the games, which was maybe hard to see this year because not having fans in the buildings. You know, sometimes the games looked a little bit dead and maybe on TV, but there's a lot of guys that maybe in the past we wouldn't have understood how they play all the time, you know, on a game by game basis, because you watch them, you know, especially the East, we play them a couple times a year, so you're watching them far less, that you really come to appreciate how hard they play all the time because you've played them that many times. And the guys don't like playing against them. And when guys don't like playing against guys, that normally means that they're going pretty hard. So it was a really interesting, interesting season in terms of the structure of it. Obviously, the reason why we had to do it was not great, but it was totally different from how we normally operate. So it was interesting to go through, and hopefully it's a once in a lifetime thing, you know, in the grand scheme of things now.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, you know, so interesting just hearing the behind the scenes kind of perspective on it. Obviously, as you mentioned, it was a very tough situation, you know, with COVID. You definitely don't want to see that again. But, you know, maybe some things to look at in the future, kind of staying in the city a little bit longer, definitely less stress on the road, and just the way that the pre-scouts are assembled and the feeling out process in the third round. I think a lot of people did notice that, and now it makes a little bit more sense on why that might have been the case, and see some of those series shift as they go. So great comments there, and just some great perspectives on the season and that process for the listener question. You know, working with elite players in Winnipeg, we talked about Rockford and just some of the high-level guys that you were able to see there, but in Winnipeg, a number of other great players, Blake Wheeler, Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, you know, such a long list. A couple of guys that played in Newfoundland, Hellebuck and Lowry are two players that I monitor a little closely as well. And, you know, just so many great players on that team. Maybe speak to the commitment to their games that you see from the player development standpoint, and just how, you know, how polished their games have got as of late. And then even maybe just talk about how players are adapting to video on a daily basis, which is a commitment we're seeing here more recently.
Yeah, we're pretty blessed with the Jets in terms of how the team has kind of moved from, you know, when they returned, and then when I came on board in 14-15, you know, we made the playoffs that year, but we were a totally different team in terms of player structure than we are now. We made that playoff kind of, you know, we ended up getting swept by Anaheim, but we made that team made the playoffs because they just committed to working hard and doing all the like really hard things all the time. And we had a whole bunch of players that did that really well. And it's evolved over the time and how players look at the video and use video as well. So part of what we do and kind of the integration with our software, I can send video directly up to huddle.com. And we can distribute that out all to the players post game, and they can watch their shifts. It's kind of an interesting split of players who watch things, and you kind of talked about their commitment to their game and how they do things. There's different coaches, there's different players that work with, you know, individual skills coaches to work on specific things. So, you know, they all do video outside of what we do, but we're sending out them video kind of from the team's perspective. So they can watch their shifts, they can watch face-offs, they can really watch whatever they want to watch specifically. We can send them information very easily. It comes to their phone or iPad or computer or whatever, however they want to view it, they can see it right away. And these guys are committed. You know, Blake Wheeler, and I know, you know, Paul's talked about it in the past, you know, in the media, there's a guy that works hard all the time, and he works so hard all the time on and off the ice. He wants to win. And he's always working on things. So he's open to, getting certain things. You know, you mentioned, Adam Lowry. Lowe's watches, it would be up there in the guys that watch video quite a bit. You know, he's a really intelligent player, and he wants to see specific things in the video. There's an interesting thing. These guys are, they're in the NHL for a reason. They are elite, and they see things that make them elite that, I mean, I never played pro hockey, so I don't see some of the things they see. And even the coaches, our coaches have been around a long time, but sometimes player perspective is interesting on video. to see what they think about it. And I think we're trying to cultivate the back and forth of that more as well, in terms of players, coaches leading meetings. So we do obviously individual meetings with players in terms of pre-scout, post-game reviews, power play, penalty kill, all those things, but also having interaction with players in those settings, I think is starting to become a bigger thing. I know kind of some of the things that I've seen with other sports outside of what I, you know, outside of hockey, you know, soccer's really, really big into that, of having more player interaction to the coaches and kind of going back and forth on that. So I think video helps to do that. There's a split of guys. Some guys don't watch video, and that's the way they choose to do things. Obviously, I'm going to give everybody the option to do it because that's good for what I do. But you know, it's kind of a split. You have you know, a third of the team that watches video religiously, kind of a third that's in the middle where they watch it a lot, or they watch it kind of, you know, at average amount of time, and then there's a group that just doesn't watch video. And each of those players kind of looks at what they need to do to be their best, and they make that decision. And you know, they're adults and elite players, so they kind of, they know what they need, and they kind of fill that role. You know, you mentioned Connor Hellebuck too. I think goalies probably watch more video than anybody, especially one-on-one with their goaltending, you know, our goaltending coach, Wade Flaherty. You know, they're spending a lot of time, you know, watching what they do as an overview all the time. And, you know, Connor Hellebuck, there's a reason why he's, you know, been a Vezina winner and candidate and been one of the best goalies in the NHL, because he's constantly wants to get better, and he does use video as a tool to do that. So all these guys that are in the NHL, they're so talented, and they do have a commitment to always want to get better. That's what's interesting about them, is they're not satisfied with you know, just kind of staying at that level. They always want to get better.
The constant improvement definitely is a major factor in, you know, why they are so successful, and definitely interesting in hearing there. You know, there is a divide, like anything in any level. I know even coaching AAA recently, I've seen that as well. And then the goaltenders definitely wanting to have that that focus as well, video being such a key, you know, impactful thing that they can use in that position. And you know, in addition to your video, you know, analytics, as we touched on here, is something that you're very invested in and takes up a lot of your time. Without being maybe too specific, how often do you find yourself focusing on that part of the game specifically? And do you have any advice maybe for people who are looking to infuse it in their own programs?
It's yeah, it's become a, as I've been in my position, it's evolved over time into being more of what I do on a day-to-day basis. So I'm fortunate because I work with a lot of really good people, and we have a really good, you know, analytics department. Maybe we don't get a lot of necessarily public recognition on it, but, whether that's good or bad. But we have a good group of guys there, and, Max, Adam, James, Jordy, the group of them, where I interact with them daily on various things that we're doing. So, you know, we're looking at information that we've processed. We're looking at processes to create thing, to look at how we're evaluating data, how we evaluate it properly, looking at, you know, things that we determine to be KPIs. You know, I'm referencing things all the time, you know, this past year. So I kind of taught myself R over the past couple of years, got proficient enough in R that I can hack together some stuff. We got some really good, some people that are really good in R and Python that can do a lot more than I can. The last year we made a decision to start using Power BI a lot more. So I've gotten more into creating visualizations and dashboards, which are interactive, so that, and we're at a point where we're still working on that, but to roll that out to whoever needs them, so they have an interactive way to use data. And then also going back to that video part of it, making kind of things similar in our dashboards and reports that we create, also recreating that in sports code, so that when you're looking at a report, you can get information, but also directly get video from it. I think the idea or advice of people looking to implement it is that People, I think, have the wrong impression of analytics. Some people will get worried about the math or the numbers. In reality, there's a certain way to explain it. It's not overly complex. It's just you're measuring different things. And then there are some complex things where you're measuring if that thing is valuable or not, or how does it relate, or is it predictive, or those kind of things. And that gets a little bit more complex. But I think really trying to explain and have a really good understanding yourself of what you're trying to, what kind of data you're trying to give somebody. If you understand it yourself and you can explain it within 2 minutes and the other person gets it, that's what you want. And I think you need to start realistic in terms of how much can I do or what do I want to do? So you need a goal. You need to look at, okay, this is what I would like to accomplish. This is the information that I want to do. How do I do it? What's the process to do that? Can I do it timely? Can I process whatever I want to and then get it so that I can always present that information? Because you may have the best thing, you may have what you think is the best thing ever, but if it takes you, you know, 10 days to get that information and you needed it 8 days ago, then it really doesn't help you to make decisions or whatever you wanted to use that information for. So I would think, you know, have a goal going into it, make sure it's timely, make sure you can explain it. And then really what you do, and it's kind of what I do in a lot of different things, is that I'm trying to sell, I'm trying to sell something to whoever I'm giving it to. So whether it's I'm teaching them about something new in sports code that I think they might like, or if it's something on the analytics side where I think this is important information, at the beginning, you can't go to the end. You have to start small and you have to get it so that people come to you. That's what you want. You want to create the relationship. You want to give them enough where they're like, it piques their interest. And then instead of you giving them stuff, now they're coming to you to request stuff, which changes the dynamic because now you're not giving them something. And people can get a little defensive at times when you give them something and maybe it contradicts something that they think. And that's not bad because sometimes, hey, yeah, everybody, you're not right all the time on everything, and that's for anybody. But when you're not right, you do at times get defensive. So if you can make a relationship where you give somebody something and it's small and all of a sudden they start to build that trust with you, like I mentioned that earlier, that trust is really important. And all of a sudden over time, what you're going to find is that instead that once that trust relationship's there, it's going to come the other way. And I'm at that point, you know, where I'm at right now, where, with the coaching staff we have and with our analytics group, that they're coming to seek information from us, which is a good thing for us. And I think that's kind of where you want to be in at the end is that you want those people to seek out that information.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great point there. And just talking about, building that trust and when you know people are coming to you, it definitely kind of justifies your efforts in a sense. And while there's definitely times where things won't agree and maybe hard conversations will have to be made just because you get contradicting points and you know, people's ideals, that's something we see at the highest levels for sure. It's definitely starts conversation and trends in the right direction. And, that's something that you were able to see here more recently at the NHL level and just, changing from a position where you're constantly supplying as and now kind of being in a position where they're coming to you. Just looking maybe at a general overview of hockey operations, and because I know we've talked a lot about the video specifically, what was the biggest adjustment in moving from the AHL level to the NHL level? Maybe it's schedule or just the general, the way coaches interact, or just kind of what are your thoughts on that area?
Yeah, I kind of touched on it earlier. I think for me personally, it was that schedule was just so much different than the American League from what I was doing, and the demands on your time, like time management becomes really, really important. And, you know, being organized is super important. I'm not a naturally organized person. I know that kind of sounds weird to say. I know that's one of my weaknesses is staying organized. So I have to try and, implement things into what I do to make sure that I stay on top of that. So I guess being aware of that is a good thing. But that schedule was pretty crazy. I think being in Canada and working in a Canadian market, the outside pressure is different, and we're in Winnipeg, so we have a certain level of pressure. I think, you know, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Ottawa, they all have their different pressures. But I think being in Canada is a different experience. And it's great when you're doing well and you're successful, and it can be not great when you're not. And I would say, you know, the majority of the people out there are really supportive of things, but that was a different experience. And not that it weighs on me a lot, but it was just a different experience kind of feeling that, because in Rockford, you know, you're the only thing in town, and people were super excited about the Ice Hogs all the time. They wanted to go there, have a good time. The winning wasn't necessarily as important. So that was a definite change. And the reality that when you get to the NHL, you're there to win, you know, that is your, there's other aspects, and, you know, developing players still at that level, developing people, those are all important aspects, but the ultimate goal is you're hired to win. And you can see with how the NHL turns over, coaches and things now, that's just as apparent as ever, that, you know, you don't have a long time to do it. So coming to that realization and moving from that was different. You know, but that the logistics of the schedule was the shocking one for me for the most part.
Yeah, the schedule is daunting for sure. And at least you had a little bit of a better adjustment. We've heard other guests talk about going from the college schedule to the NHL schedule, and definitely a nightmare situation there. But, you know, you're able to successfully make those adjustments and have and enjoyed your time in Winnipeg here and been successful at that level. Before we move into some reflective questions, maybe I'll just throw it over to the other listener question about the Simpsons moments, and maybe you can share a little bit of insight into maybe that inside joke from the communications department.
Yeah, that came from Gregor Buer in our communications department. So big fan of the Simpsons growing up. I think a lot of people in my kind of age bracket, Simpsons played a role. So the Simpsons quotes get thrown around a lot. There's a pretty good scene. If you look up, put it in H, Simpsons clips, just Google that. You'll come up with a clip. And that's kind of the, you know, it's the third period. We're down a goal. We got to put it in H because we need a goal. We need to score a goal to, you know, tie it up. Right. That's kind of the clip. So, we, you know, having fun's important, I think, especially in the, it's a pretty stressful job. I'm not going to lie. There's some stress to what we do. Even though we get to, you know, work in a hockey environment, there's stress there. But being able to have fun is really important too. So I think that it's a good question, because it highlights that maybe sometimes in the media, like, people are pretty guarded, the perception is pretty guarded, but having fun is maybe one of the most important things to the whole thing. If you're not enjoying what you're doing, that's not good. And you to be successful as a team, you need all your, you know, you need all the people to kind of be on board and enjoy that and have fun. And I think it's a good, it seems like an innocuous question, but it is a good question, because we do have fun, and I have fun with the people I work with, and that's important to me. And I wouldn't want to be in an environment where I wasn't having fun. So that's good on Gregor for throwing that one out there.
Yeah, I always love hearing the different questions come in. Sometimes you never really know what direction it's going to go in, but I like the fact that you did talk about just the importance of having fun. And to be honest with you, if you're working in hockey and not enjoying the day-to-day grind and the interactions, especially with players, as you know, guys like Andrew Shaw, you can have a lot of fun. You know, it's definitely, if you're not having fun, it's not the industry you should be in. But kind of moving into now the reflective questions, as we always do on the podcast, one of the things we like to share with listeners is resources, and whether it's books, articles, presentations, you know, conferences, like you said, some things that you like to attend, just to kind of further their knowledge in the game or coaching or whatever the case may be. So for you personally, what are some resources that you might like to recommend to listeners of the podcast today?
Well, I mean, obviously the Hockey Minds podcast, there's a lot of great content here. So you got to just keep dialed in on that. But I think, you know, there's a lot of different resources I use. One of the things that I like to do is set up, if you haven't used TweetDeck on Twitter, check it out. But searching for specific words that I might have interest in, data visualization or R or sports code, and kind of looking through to see what people are posting publicly, because there's a lot of smart people that are in a whole bunch of different professions where you can say, hey, I like this visualization that somebody's done for, you know, in the medical field, maybe this applies to me. So I do like to look outside of just hockey and get outside the bubble. I think that's an important thing. And I use Twitter a lot to do that, to be able to look at those kind of things. I think if you haven't, and I'm sure there's the people that are follow analytics more, but the Big Data Cup was put on by Stathletes earlier in the year. I can't remember exactly when it was. We were fortunate enough that we were able to be judges in that. So our whole group, analytics team and myself were part of that. And we saw some really good papers there. I think some of the presentations are on YouTube. I don't know if all the papers are accessible or not, but it was the Ottawa Analytics Conference. So I think if you look that up, there's a lot of really good papers there and some really, really quality submissions. So if you're looking for a more technical side of things, go check that out for sure, because there's some really, really good stuff there. On the kind of the video side of things, I think he's been on, Ian, with he has the @videocoaches handle on Twitter. He's done a great job of kind of bringing more awareness to the profession, I would guess. So he'll throw some things out there where you'll see something and it's interesting. He's got some interesting perspectives, and congrats to him because he's moving to Abbotsford to be a video coach in the American League. So he's starting that journey. I mean, if you're talking about just not even hockey related, I get so much information from YouTube nowadays in a whole bunch of different facets. There's just so much information out there, and the search is actually quite good. So using YouTube as a resource to gain information is super beneficial to me in terms of anything that I do. You know, when you're looking on the video side and hardware, you're looking for what's the next thing that I should get. Finding people that have used it before is a good way to do that, and seeing it on video and getting that kind of visual feedback for me is really good. So, I mean, I know it's a pretty general kind of statement to say use YouTube, but if you're not, you should be. And then that's kind of where I'm at with that.
No, I think it's really important to kind of use all those platforms. I think Twitter, for hockey anyway, has kind of taken on a life of its own, and sometimes you can get yourself in an interesting situation going down a rabbit hole there. But there is a lot of good information that can be found in YouTube. Definitely a lot of presentations, a lot of tutorials. You know, in IsoHack is another one that I talk about when talking about analytics. Just some of the even just Tableau and R, some of the quick presentations they have on there is very good for people looking to enter in that field. But I think you mentioned a lot of great things, and definitely give another shout out to Ian for his promotion there to Abbotsford as he kind of moves forward in that direction. You know, throughout your career, you've been able to work with a lot of great coaches and meet a lot of great people, and whether that's in school or outside the game or in the game as well, who kind of mentored you in a way and pushed you along in your career. So just looking at everything in general, who are some of the key mentors who helped you, and what are some of the major lessons that they taught you collectively?
It's an interesting question. I know when you kind of sent out the list before, I don't know if I have what I would say what a lot of people have in a direct mentor, in that I have somebody that I use in that role all the time. But you kind of alluded to it, being able to work with different people, and being able to see what they do really well and think about the idea of how do I incorporate that into the things that I do, is something that I've tried to be cognizant of doing, kind of as I've went through kind of all the paths that I've went down. So, you know, you start kind of on the bottom end of my parents, in, you know, work ethic and the idea of working hard and going for those kind of things. And then also taking enjoyment in it as well. Like being happy with what you're doing is important. So I think, you know, from that standpoint and from that parental guidance. That's an important thing, you know, directly on the hockey side. The coaches that you work with, I mean, so Ted Dent, Steve Pops, Ben Simon, Andrew Allen, some of those guys moved on into the NHL. Ben is the head coach in Grand Rapids. Each of those guys had things that they did really well, that, you know, maybe I got a fraction of that into how I think about things and moving to the NHL. And Paul Maurice, it's you really as an all-around person and all-around head coach, it's impressive to be able to see, and I'm really fortunate to see how he approaches things. It's hard to really describe it to people outside of it. I think it got kind of pumped. I think it got a little bit of publicity at the end of the season when Paul Stastny had his 1,000th game, and Paul, they talked about the speech that Paul gave before the game, and I'm thinking back to it right now. I'm getting goosebumps because that's how good it was, and he's like that in a lot of different areas. That's one of the jobs that he does. But seeing how he can do that and seeing how he relates to people, I think is a really big thing that I've learned from Paul. You know, Jamie Compon, unbelievable worker. I think Todd Woodcroft was on here earlier. And I know Todd and Jamie had worked a long time, and I think Todd probably said some pretty good things about Jamie, but Jamie is, I don't think you can find a person that dedicates more to hockey and what he does, and seeing the things that he's able to do with it and the knowledge that he has is outstanding. Charlie Huddy, I mean, where do you go with Charlie Huddy? He's been in the game for so long, over 3,000 games between coaching and hockey, like playing, winning Stanley Cups in that era. Seeing how I think the great thing about Charlie is how he relates to players, and he obviously comes from he has all that experience. So being able to see him relate to a player where I didn't play in the league, and seeing how he's able to do that, and not necessarily talk about when he played, but how he approaches things, it's impressive. I think the big thing with it, and like I said, I don't have a specific mentor, but being able to identify potentially where maybe your weaknesses are or where you'd like to get better and pick out those individual pieces, I think is really important. And I think all those people that I've been around, especially in hockey, have been important. And I haven't even gone to the huddle guys. I think one guy I'd be remiss to say that I haven't said is Walt Rock. He was an NBA video coach. I think he would be I don't know what you want to call him, the godfather of sports code. I've never seen somebody who's so proficient at using something. It's actually amazing the way that every conversation I have with Walt, even to this day, and even that I would say I'm above average in terms of how I use the software, I learn something new in every conversation I have with Walt. So there's a guy that certainly I don't have a lot of conversations with him, but when I do, they're super valuable. So I think finding those people that you can do that kind of stuff is really important. And I guess I'd be remiss to say too, you know, not necessarily a mentor, but having really good family support is important. And I have a wife who's been on the journey with me throughout. So we started dating in high school. So we're 17. So we actually this year spent half our life together, and she's made the transition through, you know, me going on being a scientist to becoming a kid who was going to Ontario and leaving her to be in sports for some reason, to moving to the United States, and then, you know, getting a job in the American League, leaving and her coming down to the US with me, and then coming back to Winnipeg and living in her hometown and being in the NHL. So, and we have two great kids now. And obviously I don't think I'd be where I'm at without her as well.
Well, a great statement to make there. The family support, a lot of people realize it is so key. And for those, you know, just knowing the daily grind of the game, it, you know, it takes its toll. But when you have those people in your corner and people in the game who are, you know, willing to lend their guidance and, you know, maybe not a quote unquote mentorship role, but still that peer-to-peer connection and just being able to be around people in their presence, you can learn a lot through that as well. As a final question here on the podcast, as we ask everybody, what's one piece of advice that you would have for someone who's looking to enter hockey operations and maybe more specifically video coaching and look to be successful in that role?
One piece of advice. It's tough. There's so many things. I think the biggest thing is don't worry about when the opportunity is going to come. Be ready for it when it does. That's how I've kind of progressed through this. I may not have had all the skill set that you'd necessarily say, hey, this guy is the perfect candidate for this job based on his resume. But when the thing, when it came to doing what I needed to do, I was able to work my way through it and, you know, prove that I was that person. So I don't know if you necessarily need to worry about where it, when it's going to come, but just being ready in whatever way you think you provide that. So being ready in whatever, and it's not the best way to say it, but knowing your strengths and then being able to use that when that opportunity comes, I think is super important. If you could say a second piece on that, and I think you kind of alluded to it as well, is throwing yourself out there. You know, the networking thing is important, and I'm not a great networker personally, but I think it is important. And then creating some sort of value in that connection, I think, is important too, because I get a lot of people sending me messages even now about wanting to connect. But every once in a while, there's one where they say something and it, for whatever reason, it clicks, and then you remember them at some other point, and you never know when that's going to come up. So being ready for those opportunities and make those connections, because those connections could at some point lead to those opportunities.
Great advice there, and just being ready. And you know, as we've said over and over again in this interview and in numerous interviews before, that opportunity comes when you least expect it. So just be ready and trust your instincts and work hard until that day comes. Matt, really enjoyed the conversation, and you know, as I recently joined the video coaching community in a more prominent role, it's great to learn from you and follow along your career. So I wish you all the best moving forward, and best of luck with next season and the upcoming journey for you as well.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's always good to get some more people in the video coaching fraternity. So I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully people can see it some value. If they want to reach out to me, I'm on Twitter, at Matt Briefy on Twitter. You know, I'm always open to talking with different people, no matter who's listening. I'm always open to new ideas, so feel free to reach out.
Yeah, we'll definitely get that out to people and share your information. And thanks again, and all the best.
Thank you.
One thing that fans within the game, hockey minds, and players can agree upon is that when done responsibly, there's nothing better at the end of the day than a cold beer that you enjoy for both its taste and its aroma. And this segment of the Hockey Minds podcast is brought to you by Kitty Vitty Brewery. You can visit their tap room, now open 7 days a week, and their new retail location in St. John's, Newfoundland at 16 Harborview Avenue. If you're one of those people who are maybe looking for some more entertainment, somewhere to sit with friends, you can definitely check out their original location in Kitty Vitty, Newfoundland. Join the Kitty Vitty Craft Club at kittyvittybrewery.ca and give them a follow on social media to keep up to date on the latest brew news. If you're not from Newfoundland and not from the East Coast and you want to get involved, definitely follow them on social media and learn more about their beer, which is great for the casual beer drinking fan and also the beer enthusiast. And stay tuned, because who knows, maybe they'll find their way to get their beer to a location near you. Check out Kitty Vitty Brewery today for more information on their beer, clothing, and all things Kitty Vitty Brewery. I'd like to thank Matt for joining me on the podcast and talking about his career and current NHL role. We've yet to have an NHL video coach on the podcast, so for providing so much insight into his role and the team setting, I would like to once again thank him. If you would like to get in touch with Matt to learn more about his experiences, I encourage you to reach out to him directly, or you can contact HockeyMindsPodcast@outlook.com and I can help make that connection for you. Tune into our next episode to hear from more outstanding hockey operations personnel like Matt, as we have an outstanding lineup of scouts, coaches, and more on tap in the coming weeks. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for listening in today and for continually listening to the podcast. Be sure to check out our social media platforms and let us know what content you would like to see moving forward. As always, stay safe and all the best.